Everybody, and welcome to episode 282, Encore episode 22, Stan Rogers Remastered, part 1. Today's Encore episode features an interview with Stan Rogers producer Paul Mills, and he produced all of Stan's material, and then not long ago, remastered Stan's collection of incredible music. So today's podcast begins a two-part feature that will end up next week with what will be a fascinating reprise of Stan's work, in conversation with the man who not only produced Stan's music, but from time to time also accompanied him on the road live in various performances across the country. So don't leave your space. Stay right where you're to, and I'll be right back where you're at with all of this and more in a finger snap. Well, good day and welcome to Sounds Atlantic here on the podcast. Today we're going to showcase a project begun by one of Canada's finest record producers, and he's Toronto-based Paul Mills, who a while back decided to remaster the collection of the incomparable Stan Rogers. Now, if you don't already know this, and forgive me if you do, Stan Rogers would fit comfortably alongside artists like Gordon Lightfoot, Ian Tyson, Neil Young, John Mitchell, Joni Mitchell, Leonard Cohen and Bruce Coburn, just to name a few, all Canadian folk royalty, to borrow a term from the late Ron Hynes. Well, sadly, Stan was the victim of a fire aboard an Air Canada flight from Dallas to Montreal back in 1983. Some survived that flight, including a fellow named Dick Forrest, a man I actually worked for during my early years at Air Canada in Montreal. Tragically, others like Stan did not survive and thus ended an emerging career that hadn't even hit stride. Stan was only 33 years old when he died, but he left behind a wonderful legacy of music that found its way into books of poetry, song, TV, and films, and into the hearts of most Atlantic Canadians in particular, if not millions of Canadians in general. Born in Hamilton, Ontario, from Maritime parents who had relocated to Hamilton in search of work shortly after their marriage in July 1948, as a youngster, Stan often spent summers going back home visiting family in Guysborough County, Nova Scotia, where he became completely enamored with the East Coast. As a young man, Rogers briefly attended both McMaster University and Trent University, and his career began and he started recording. The early material that he played was often Celtic in its sensibility. By the time his career ended, his best-known pieces included songs that become part of the lexicon of Canadian folk music, including Northwest Passage, Barrett's Privateers, The Mary Ellen Carter, Make and Break Harbor, The Idiot, The Field Behind the Plow, Lies, Fogarty's Cove, White Squall, and 45 Years. What a legacy, indeed. Throughout his childhood, Stan would practice his singing and playing along with his brother, Garnet, 6 years his junior, and Garnet continues to this day to play the folk circuit throughout North America. One of Stan's sons, Nathan Rogers, is also an established Canadian folk artist with a voice similar to his dad's. Rogers' legacy includes his recordings, songbook, and plays for which he was commissioned to write music. The songs are still frequently covered by other musicians and are perennial favorites at Canadian campfires and song circles. Members of Rogers' band, including his brother Garnet, continue to be active performers and form a significant part of the fabric of contemporary Canadian folk music. Well, following his death, he was nominated for the 1984 Juno Awards in the category of Best Male Vocalist. In 1993, his posthumous live album, Home in Halifax, was likewise nominated for Best Roots and Traditional Album. His widow, Ariel, continues to oversee his estate and legacy. His music and lyrics have been featured in numerous written publications and films. Adrian Clarkson, who prior to serving as Governor General of Canada from 1999 until 2005, had worked for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and she highlighted Rogers' career in a 1989 TV documentary called One Warm Line on CBC Television. She also quoted Rogers in her investorial address. When CBC's Peter Zosky asked Canadians to pick an alternate national anthem, Northwest Passage was the overwhelming choice. The Stan Rogers Folk Festival is held every year in Canso, Nova Scotia. In 1995, several artists performed two nights of concerts at Halifax's Rebecca Kahn Auditorium, which were released on two albums that year as Remembering Stan Rogers, and if time permits, we'll play a few of those selections from that collection.
For just one time, I would take the Northwest Passage.
Paul Mills, or a.k.a. Curly Boy Stubbs, a moniker supplied by festival director Mitch Podolak, is a University of Western Ontario graduate, superb guitar player, performer, CBC music producer, and award-winning record producer for the Borealis Record Company in Toronto. Now, over the years, Paul cultivated many rewarding friendships in the Canadian folk music community, and his activities as a producer led him to numerous record projects with a wide range of artists, from Oscar Peterson and the Canadian Brass to folk acts like the John Allen Cameron and Stan Rogers, of course, to name a few. Today, he owns and operates the Millstream Music Production Company, and with more than 100 albums to his credit, is a producer in always high demand. Now, just before Paul Mills joins us, I must take a moment to honor a woman who has just recently passed away following her bout with cancer. Lynn Horne was a beautiful woman who championed singer-songwriters and musicians throughout Atlantic Canada. I first met Lynn Horne at the East Coast Music Awards in St. John's, Newfoundland in 2004. She was introduced by a good friend and former Newfoundland and Labrador producer June Hiscock. At the time, she had just begun to manage Ron Hines, who was my favorite singer-songwriter. We developed an instant friendship that ended when she passed away in Halifax just a few weeks ago. First and foremost, Lynn Horne was a remarkably warm, thoughtful, and genuinely authentic human being, an unforgettable soul who has dedicated her career to the promotion of Atlantic Canadian artists. Lynn was loved by every artist with whom she came in contact. Ron Hines, The Trues, Charlie Acor, they were all lovingly navigated through the industry by Lynn, and even those who simply came in contact with her spoke glowingly of this wonderful lady. Charlie Acor said, "She was the voice in my head that helped me navigate the bus. She worried for her artists in the way a mother worries for her children," recalled Charlie recently, and her professionalism and ethics drew many artists into her orbit. Charlie credits her, and I believe he's right, in helping to save Ron Hines' career as he struggled with serious addiction issues before finally succumbing to cancer in 2015. In April 2018, Lynn was awarded the East Coast Music Association's Dr. Helen Creighton Lifetime Achievement Award for having a profound and lasting effect on the music industry. East Coast Music Chairman Dean Stairs recalled that she cared deeply about the people behind the art and always took the time to carefully listen to everyone she met. She was a passionate advocate for the East Coast music industry, and I am privileged to have known her as a friend. This show is dedicated to you, dear Lynn. Rest in peace. And now back to today's show. So it's a privilege for me today to be speaking to a man who not only produced all of Stan's work, but from whom time to time also joined him on stage with his guitar wizardry. And here with me from his home and his studio in Toronto to talk about all of this and more is Paul Mills.
Racing one warm line through a land so wide and savage, and make a Northwest Passage to the sea.
Paul Mills, it's an absolute delight for me to be able to talk to you today about this project, The Very Best of Stan Rogers. If you would tell us about the project. Why now? Why this?
Laurence, I'm delighted to be here. This is great, and thanks for playing this music. The records all came out in the 70s and early 80s. The last record was released in 83. And those were the days of vinyl. And CDs were just starting to come around in the early 80s. And we converted all of the masters to CD in the late 80s. But frankly, I certainly didn't know what I was doing in terms of digital production in those early days. And a lot of the mastering that was done to transfer them to from vinyl to CD is frankly substandard compared to today's standards. So I was advocating for a long time to remaster these recordings and also to put out a best of. And Ariel Rogers, who runs the record company, finally agreed to that about 3 years ago. And I set about to remaster all of the original vinyl.
Ariel is Stan's wife.
Ariel's, yes, was his wife at the time. Yeah. So it was, I was really, really happy that she was willing to go ahead with this. And I got to tell you, remastering these recordings was a real trip down memory lane for me.
Well, you played with Stan. Did you also produce the original recordings? I'm not clear about your connection in a production context.
Yeah, I produced all of those original recordings, except for one. There was one called For the Family that Stan produced himself. But I produced five titles with him while he was alive, and a couple since. There was from Coffee House to Concert Hall, which was a compilation of unreleased masters, which I produced, and now the best of.
You are uniquely placed to do this, obviously. When you say down memory lane, take us down memory lane for a second.
Well, Ariel, bless her heart, had kept all of the original master tapes, and she brought them over to my house in the trunk of her car one day, and we pulled out all these boxes, these big reels of quarter-inch tape, and all with the titles all handwritten. It was my handwriting, and I hadn't seen these.
There's
tapes.
A help.
I hadn't seen these tapes in probably 35 years.
Wow.
So,
could you read your writing?
Yeah, I could. I was much neater then than I am now. But it was great. So I took the tapes up to a place up in Aurora, Ontario. Richard Hess is a guy who's a master at restoring any old tapes you may have in any format you could mention. He can even take an 8-track and turn it into digital sound. So I took all these tapes up to Richard, and he transferred them all, converted them to digital, and transferred them all using the highest resolution that is available. Transferred them all to digital format.
When you heard the first product, what was your impression?
You mean coming back from Richard?
Or? Yeah.
Well, it was. I was delighted to hear. Like these were the original tapes before they were mastered for vinyl. Okay. So I was delighted to hear that there was all the content was there. We hadn't lost anything. Everything was crystal clear. Wow. And. But I knew that there was room for improvement on the sound of these recordings. So I took them to Joe Carvalho, who's a wonderful mastering engineer in Toronto, who has a great studio, a great room. And we spent about a week and a half together just going through these five titles and Joe working his magic on them. And I've had people say to me since hearing the remasters that they're hearing things on these recordings they'd never heard before.
Yeah. Well, what might that be?
Well, what the mastering does is it can clarify the sound. It can get rid of any muddiness or any blurriness in the sound, and it can, through processes of equalization, compression, and so on, all this technical stuff, you can actually make the recording sparkle again to make them sound more alive and clearer. So that's what we were able to do at Joe's place, and I was really happy with the result.
Yeah. Do you remember the first recording you heard?
You mean coming out of?
Yes.
Well, we started at the beginning with the first record, Fogarty's Cove, just started. I think the first cut on that is Watching the Apples Grow, and it just—I don't know—I hadn't heard it in its original form in at least 3 decades.
Wow.
So, So it really did make me smile, and it just took me back to those days in the studio with Stan.
Paul, I'd like to sneak in as many tracks as we can. Why don't you set Fogarty's Cove up for us, and we'll come back. There's an awful lot of ground I'd like to cover with you. Tell us about Fogarty's Cove.
The song Fogarty's Cove?
Yes.
Well, I had started working with Stan some years before we did that first record. I was working with CBC Radio at the time, and I did some recordings with Stan. And in those early days that I knew him, he was not writing any of the songs about the Maritimes or any of the narrative epic songs that he became known for. He was just a singer-songwriter, having been influenced by the likes of Joni Mitchell and so on. And Fogarty's Cove, the song, was really one of the first songs that he played for me, which actually had this Maritime roots angle to it. And it was just like, it was like he had turned a corner in his songwriting style and ability. It was a wonderful, joyous song about the East Coast, and a lot of the place names in it are from the part of Nova Scotia where his family was from and where he spent his boyhood summers. So Halfway Cove and Queensport Light and all these places that are mentioned in the song are real places on the North Shore of Nova Scotia.
Here's Fogarty's Cove.
We just lost sight of the Queensport Light down the bay before us, and the wind has blown some cold today with just a wee touch of snow. Along the shore from Lazy Head, hard abeam, half island, tonight we let the anchor go down in Fogarty's Cove. My Sally's like a raven's wing, her hair's like her mother's, with hands that make quick work of a chore and eyes like the top of a stove. Come supper time, she'll walk the beach, wrapped in my old duffel, with her eyes upon the masthead beach down in Fogarty's Cove. She will walk the sandy shore so plain, watch the combers roaming, till I come to wild rose chance again down in Fogarty's Cove. She'll walk the sandy shore so plain, watch the combers rolling, till I come to wild rose chance again down in Fogarty's Cove. Cries when I'm away to sea, nags me when I'm with her. She'd rather ride a government job or maybe go on the go. But I love her way as I put about and nose into the channel. My Sally keeps a supper and a bed for me down in Fogarty's Cove. She will walk the sandy shore so plain, watch the combers rolling, till I come to wild rose chance again down in Fogarty's Cove. She'll walk the sandy shore so plain, watch the combers rolling, till I come to wild rose chance again down in Fogarty's Cove.
Everybody, this is April Virch. I want to thank you for joining my friend Ron Moores and listening to Sounds Atlantic. Stay tuned for the finest roots and acoustic music from Atlantic Canada.
Set your round my way. Tune the fiddles up. Let's hear the guitars play.
That's Fogarty's Cove. It comes from a brand new CD, The Very Best of Stan Rogers, and I'm talking with Paul Mills from his either home or studio or both.
Both, actually.
I kind of thought so. Oh, it's a delight to have you here. So here you have this young fellow born in Hamilton, raised in the area, writing about all these maritime places and locations and senses and feels. And I mean, I remember the first time I heard a Stan song. Gosh, I don't know. I guess it was back in the late 70s, early 80s, and I was in a bar, and it was probably the upper deck or the lower deck or one of those, And I just assumed he was from the area, but people were madly in love with his music back yep. then, and I guess still are. How does that happen?
Well, I think he was, first of all, I should explain that both of his parents were from Nova Scotia. His mother was from out near Canso, and his father was from Pictou. And Stan always considered himself a Maritimer. I mean, even in spite of the fact that he was born and raised in Hamilton, Ontario, he always considered himself an East Coaster and spent all of his summers there. So he was really steeped in the traditions of that part of Canada. And when he started writing about it, he was able to capture the feeling and the flavor of life in the Maritimes.
With great authenticity, I might
say. Absolutely. And it really touched people who lived there and lived the life there, particularly people in rural Maritimes and the fishermen and so on. He captured it. One thing you got to know about Stan was that he had this enormous capacity, this enormous memory, and he would talk to people. He loved to talk to people and hear their stories. And as they told their stories to Stan, it went into this giant filing cabinet in his brain, and it just never left. And songs would start to percolate up there and eventually roll out onto the page. But I think it's because he was such a good listener and such a good observer of life that he was able to touch so many nerves.
I'm going to put you in it's probably an unfair spot because I'm going to tax your memory probably in some of these instances. But if you would, tell us about Free in the Harbor.
Free in the Harbor, a song about the fact that many Maritimers, and in this case Newfoundlanders, have to go west to make a living, with the fishery being in such a state and it being hard to make ends meet at home. So they would travel to Alberta and work the oil rigs. And this song talks about that, but it draws the analogy between the oil fields and the fishing fields in a beautiful way, where he talks about hauling it away, haul it away. You could either be hauling a fishnet away or you could be hauling a drill tool away. And he really paints the picture vividly of what it's like to leave home in order to make a living.
Here's Free in the Harbor.
Well, it's blackfish at play in Hermitage Bay, from Bush through across to Gloss Island. They broach and they spout and they lift their flukes out, and they wave to a town that is dying. Now it's many's the boat that has bite on the foam, hauling away, hauling away. But there's many more fellas been leaving their homes where the whales make free in the harbor. It's at Portage in Maine, you'll see them again on their way to the hills of Alberta. With lopsided grins, they waggle their chins, and they brag of the wage they'll be earning. Then it's quick, pull the string, boys, and get the tool out. Haul it away, haul it away. But just 2 years ago, you could hear the same shout where the whales make free in the harbor. Free in the harbor, the blackfish are sporting again. Free in the harbor, untroubled by comings and goings of men who once did pursue them as oil from the sea. Hauling away, hauling away. Now they're Calgary roughnecks from Hermitage Bay, where the whales make free in the harbor. It's a living they've found deep in the ground, and if there's doubts, it's best they ignore them, nor think on the bones, the crosses and stones of their fathers that came there before them. In the taverns of Edmonton, fishermen shout, haul it away, haul it away. Then have 300 years buried up by the bay, where the whales make free in the harbor. Free in the harbor, the blackfish are sporting again. Free in the harbor, untroubled by comings and goings of men who once did pursue them as oil from the sea. Falling away, now they're Calgary roughnecks from Hermitage Bay, where the whales make free in the harbor. Free.
That's Free in the Harbor. It comes from the very best of Stan Rogers, and I'm talking with Paul Mills about a CD he's just produced. And for those of you Stan fans, well, you'll recognize the music here. And for those of you who may not be, well, welcome to one of Canada's finest singer-songwriters whose legacy is enormous. And we'll get to the legacy a little bit later. You know, Stan's situation reminds me a little bit of J.P. Cormier, because there's another fellow born in Ontario and lived, I guess, most of his life in Cape Breton. He's on what he considers to be home. And has written eloquently about the same sort of subject matter in some respects. I was just listening to his Great Harbor Deep, and it's a stunning tale of life in Atlantic Canada and the trials and tribulations of what happens when you're forced to move houses. But Stan had this in huge impact on songwriters, his music has appeared in plays and in poems and in many books and curricula and so forth. You're uniquely placed, Paul, in as much as you played with Stan. Could you tell us about that period?
Yeah, I wasn't really a regular member of the band. His band usually consisted of himself and a bass player and his brother Garnet on fiddle. But occasionally I would join the three of them, particularly when he did an annual concert at the Rebecca Cohen Auditorium in Halifax, and I would join the band for those occasions. That was kind of like, you know how Gordon Lightfoot has his annual Massey Hall concerts in Toronto? Well, that sort of became Stan's kind of homecoming concert in a way. And so I would join the band for that and a few other concerts here and there, but not a regular touring member of the band.
What was it like when you stood on stage in those?
Well, in the Rebecca Cohen Auditorium, it was like being in a rock star. I'll tell you, it was amazing. I remember, it was always packed, and people were cheering and stomping their feet and standing on their feet and clapping and all this, and we all just felt like $1 million up there. It was very exciting.
The Stan Rogers Festival is an annual event that draws people from all over Canada.
Mm-hmm. In Cancel.
Yeah. Had you attended any of those?
I've been to many of them, yeah. And I've played three or four of them. It's really nice that the festival is so successful in Stan's mother's place of origin. And his aunt still lives there, and so he's got family all around the Canso area. And it's got to be, I would say, it's the biggest economic event in Canso, in Canso's year. It's a town of, I think, 400, 500 people. It swells to 12,000 when the festival's on, and it's quite magical.
It's amazing. That's astonishing. It's a bit like Havelock.
It is.
The Havelock Jamboree.
Absolutely.
Like Havelock's about the same size. And I think there are 80,000
people.
80,000. Holy cow.
Well, it's bluegrass in country. It's not, not right. Folk music.
Well, that's true. Oh, my goodness. But again, you must have some just wonderful memories of being drawn in and part of that.
Indeed, I do.
Event. Well, it's fascinating how a young fellow like that, again, could go from one part of the country and identify more strongly with with his roots than perhaps his own home.
In a way, yeah. He was quite adamant about the fact that he was a Maritimer and proud of it. And it's almost like he was apologetic about living in Ontario.
We won't go there. Tell us about, if you would, White Squall.
White Squall, speaking of Ontario, White Squall is from the last album we did together, and it's called From Fresh Water. At that point, we had done four albums together, and a couple of them had been featuring songs largely from the east part of Canada. The fourth album was called Northwest Passage, and it was primarily songs about the West, because at that point in Stan's career, he had been touring the West quite a bit, across the prairies in BC and so on. So a lot of those songs are about that part of Canada. And for the fourth album, he decided that he would, as he put it, fill the gap in the map and write songs about his home province of Ontario. And so From Freshwater is about that. And White Squall leads off that album, and it's a stunning song about a phenomenon that can happen on the Great Lakes that doesn't happen in the ocean at all. And that is what they call a white squall can blow up out of nowhere. You could be sailing under a perfectly sunny, cloudless day, and then all of a sudden, wham, this huge downpour would hit you with high winds and so on. And
Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Exactly, yep. And it's a Great Lakes phenomenon, and I think he captures that phenomenon beautifully on the song. And once again, in Stan's inimitable style, it's not sort of observing the phenomenon from outside of it. It's observing it from inside it, from the point of view of an individual.
Here's White Squall.
Now it's just my luck to have the watch with nothing left to do. Watch the deadly waters glide as we roll north to the Sioux. Wonder when they'll turn again and pitch us to the rail. Whirl off one more youngster in the gale. The kid was so damn eager, it was all so big and new. Never had to tell him twice or find him work to do. And evenings on the mess deck, he was always first to sing and show us pictures of the girl he'd read in spring. But I told that kid 100 times, don't take the lakes for granted. They go from calm to 100 knots, so fast they seem enchanted. But tonight some red-eyed Wyarton girl lies staring at the wall, and her lover's gone into a white squall. Now it's a thing that us old-timers know, in a sultry summer calm there comes a blow from nowhere, and it goes off like a bomb. And a 15,000-tonner can be thrown upon her beam, while the gale takes all before it with a scream. The kid was on the hatches, lying staring at the sky. From where I stood, I swear I could see tears fall from his eyes. So I hadn't the heart to tell him that he should be on a line, even on a night so warm and kind. But I told that kid 100 times, don't take the lakes for granted. They go from calm to 100 knots, so fast they seem enchanted. But tonight some red-eyed Wyarton girl lies staring at the wall, and her lover's gone into a white squall. When it struck, he sat up with a start. I roared to him, get down. But for all that he could hear, I could as well not make a sound.
So I come there to the stanchions, and I felt my face go pale as he crawled hand over hand along the rail. Now I can feel her healing over with the fury of the blow. I watched the rail go under, then so terrible and slow. Then like some great dog, she shook herself and roared upright again. Far over side, I heard him howling. But I told that kid 100 times, don't take the licks for granted. They go from calm to 100 knots, so fast they seem enchanted. But tonight some red-eyed Wyarton girl lies staring at the wall, and her lover's gone into white squall. So it's just my luck to have the watch with nothing left to do. Watch the deadly waters glide as we roll north to the Sioux. Wonder when they'll turn again and pitch us to the rail and whirl off one more youngster in the gale. And I tell these kids 100 times, don't take the licks for granted. They go from calm to 100 knots, so fast they seem enchanted. But tonight some red-eyed Wyarton girl lies staring at the wall, and her lover's gone into a white squall.
Hey folks, it's J.P. Cormier here, and you're listening to my old buddy Ron Moores on Sounds Atlantic.
That's White Squall. It comes from the very best of Stan Rogers, and we're reviewing the CD. We're showcasing the CD today with Paul Mills, his producer. Come back to White Squall for a second. You mentioned you made an interesting comment about from the point of view of the individual. When I listened to the Edmund Fitzgerald, Gordon's masterpiece, arguably his best known song. It's just simply a masterpiece, but it's written in epic fashion from what I call the outside in. And then you flip that around and you get a song like White Squall, and it reminds me of one that Ron Hines wrote. And I know you're intimately familiar with Ron, having produced his last several records, but Atlantic Blue has that quality.
Yes.
To it. You know, it's perceived from somebody who was in the middle of it from an individual's point of view and how it affected the individual. It's a fascinating bit of writing.
Yes. It's very skillful writing.
Yeah. You mentioned, and I want to pick that theme up about song selection, because somewhere, I think, and maybe it's in the liner notes, you mentioned that that most of the songs here, or a good number of them, were Stan's favorites. And I know that it must have been fairly, as you say, tricky. It had to be daunting, in addition to tricky, to pick the songs that would appear on the very best of. I mean, you know, it's like, how do you pick between friends? You know?
Indeed. It was a challenging task. Now, there were some obvious choices that we just could not exclude. I mean, you've got to put on Barrett's Privateers. You've got to put on the Mary Ellen Carter. And there's a few others that Make and Break Harbor and a few others that are, these are songs that have been picked up by a lot of people, and a lot of people sing them, and they're favorites. So those had to go on Northwest Passage, another example.
Paul, I was going to ask you then, that said, how do you mentioned that you picked a number that illustrate the breadth and depth of, if I can put it that way, of his writing. Mm-hmm. Which ones come to mind there?
Well, there were, after we went through the obvious favorites, then it really came down to songs that, and Ariel and I did this together, songs that we felt really showcased Stan's superb talents as a writer. And I think a song like Lies is a good example of that, which is this a song about the loneliness of being the wife of a farmer on the prairies. Another example would be the Jeannie C, which is an absolutely heart-wrenching story about the sinking of a ship. And when you get into those songs, you really see the craftsmanship of the writing in these songs. Stan used to talk about writing as painting pictures. And a lot of the best writers write this way. There's an old saying that he used to espouse, and I totally agree with it. As a writer, you must show me, don't tell me, show me. And an example in Lies, again, the farmer's wife sitting at the kitchen table feeling very melancholy and lonely and sad in a way. And it paints a picture of her sitting at the table, and the line goes, she takes a cup of coffee and drips carnation from the can.
Wow.
So it's, you know, she doesn't pour milk into the coffee. She drips carnation from the can.
Yeah. Poetry.
Yep.
Let's take a listen to Lies, and we'll follow it with the Jeannie C.
Last the kids are gone now for the day. She reaches for the coffee as the school bus pulls away. Another day to tend the house and plant for Friday at the Legion when she's dancing with her man. Sure was a bitter winter. Friday will be fine, and maybe last year's Easter dress will serve her one more time. She passed for 29, but for her eyes, but winter lines are telling wicked lies. Oh, lies. Lies, all lies. Too many lines there in that face, too many to erase or to disguise. They must be telling lies. This the face that won for her the man whose amazed and clumsy fingers put that ring upon her hand. No need to search that mirror for the years. The menace in their message shouts across the blur of tears. So this is beauty's finish. Like Rodin's Bellemiere, the pretty maiden trapped inside the ranch wife's toil and care. Well, after seven kids, that's no surprise. But why cannot her mirror tell her lies? Oh, lies. Telling wicked lies. Lies, all lies. Too many lines there in that face, too many to erase or to disguise. They must be telling lies. She shakes off the bitter web she wove and turns to set the mirror gently face down by the stove. She gathers up her apron in her hand, pours a cup of coffee and drips carnation from the can.
and thinks ahead to Friday. 'Cause Friday will be fine. She'll look up in that weathered face that loves hers line for line, to see that maiden shining in his eyes, and laugh at how her mirror tells her lies. Oh, lies. All those lies are telling wicked lies. Lies, all lies. Too many lines there in that face, too many to erase or to disguise. They must be telling lies. All those lines are telling wicked lies. Lies, all lies. Too many lines there in that face, too many to erase or to disguise. They must be telling lies.
From cold days and blights to the towns and cities of Atlantic Canada, you're listening to Ron Moore, South Atlantic.
Come on, you lads, draw near to me, that I be not forsaken. This day was lost, the genie see, and my living has been taken. I'll go to sea no more. We set out this day in the bright sunrise, the same as any other. My son and I, and old John Price, in the boat named for my mother. I'll go to sea no more. Now it's well you know what the fishing has been. It's been scarce and hard and cruel. But this day, by God, we sure caught cod. And we sang and we laughed like fools. I'll go to sea no more. I'll never know what it was we struck, but strike we did like thunder. John Price gave a cry and pitched overside. Now it's forever he's gone under. I'll go to sea no more. Now a leak we've sprung, let there be no delay. If the genie sea were saving, John Price is drowned and slipped away. So I'll patch
just a hole while you're bailing. I'll go to sea no more.
But no leak I found from bow to hole. No rock it was that got her, but what I found made me heart stop cold. For every seam poured water, I'll go to sea. My God, I cried as she went down. That boat was like no other. My father built her when I was 9 and named her for my mother. I'll go to sea no more. And sure, I could have another maid in the boat shop down in Dover, but I would not love the keel they laid like the one the waves roll over. I'll go to sea no more. So come on, you lads, draw near to me, that I be not forsaken. This day was lost, the genie sea, and my whole life has been taken. I'll go to sea no more.
We built those boats down at the shipyard for 40 years or more.
Hey, this is Dave Gunning, and you're listening to Sounds Atlantic with my good buddy Ron Moores.
As I watch the night fall across a tired floor, far too old for working anymore.
All right, everyone, that's the Genie C, and we backed it with Lies. They both come from the very best of Stan Rogers. I'm talking with Paul Mills, who produced this CD in conjunction with Stan's wife, Ariel.
Well, that's the end of part one of this podcast, but don't go away. The second half is just a click away, so stay tuned.